The next case, State versus Ferguson. How much rebuttal time, counsel?
Your Honor, if I could reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please.
All right. Proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Andrew Subin. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Timothy Ferguson. I want to focus on the search and seizure issues in this case, which are the first two of the four issues that Mr. Ferguson raises in his appeal.
Where do those take us?
Well, I think they take us to suppressing the evidence.
Suppress the evidence. What difference does it make in this case?
I think it makes a great deal of difference
well,
if the evidence is suppressed.
That. Take your time to explain to me why I would care about procedural matters that I think are subsumed in the ultimate conviction and that they had and had no prejudice whatsoever, or if any prejudice, inconsequential prejudice,
well,
to that conviction. That's the answer you need to give, or you're going to be in trouble in this. And you don't need 15 minutes to do it, Mr. Subin. It's not complicated.
Well, this is a 10.
This is 10?
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's for the next
person. The next
you want 15
yeah.
minutes.
Well, Your Honor, the initial warrantless detention of the vehicle, I think the remedy for that is suppression of the evidence that was discovered in the car. That evidence would include the cocaine that Mr. Ferguson was convicted of possessing with intent to distribute. So I think that if the court were to overrule Judge Urig on the initial suppression issue, detention of the vehicle, it renders the subsequent search, even though that search was pursuant to a warrant, I understand the court's point, but even though that subsequent search was pursuant to a warrant, the unlawful detention of the vehicle, I think, renders all further proceedings invalid. And I think that there has to be a remedy for the warrantless, if the court finds that the warrantless detention of Mr. Ferguson's vehicle for 15 hours was unreasonable, which I suggest that it was. If the court finds that it was unreasonable, there has to be a remedy for that.
Well, then let's pursue that, because it seems to me that almost universally the answer has been where a warrant is issued, that you're somewhat begging the question when you say that the vehicle was unlawfully detained. The law, particularly with regard to individuals, not necessarily with regard to evidence, but I think it's parallel, if not coextensive, is that you can do such detention as is necessary to preserve the scene, to preserve the circumstances until a warrant is issued. Was there any delay here in obtaining the warrant that was undue, unjust,
yes,
prejudicial in and of itself?
Well, I argue that there was. There was a 15-hour delay. Mr. Ferguson at that point was not arrested. He was not taken into custody. He was presumed innocent, just like any other citizen. And a delay from an 11 o'clock...
It was his car that was arrested.
Well, it was his car, it was his wallet, it was his car keys.
Right, it's not him. So he's not in custody, it's the evidence that's in custody.
Well, but Your Honor, the framers of our state constitution and a considerable amount of jurisprudence requires a search warrant in that situation. State versus Huff has been the law for 20-plus years, which says that they can detain a vehicle in this situation for the amount of time reasonably needed to obtain a warrant. 15 hours was far longer than the amount of time reasonably needed to obtain a warrant. A warrant can be had in half an hour with a phone call. The
Mr.
officer,
Subin, you haven't challenged the trial court's findings of fact on that point, have you?
With regard to whether the officer could have obtained a warrant?
No, on the reasonable time.
Well, the trial court found it reasonable. I argued it was unreasonable. I think that's the issue that's before this court, whether it was reasonable.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. You haven't challenged the findings that the trial court made with respect to the reasonableness finding. Is that correct?
No, I don't think that whether it was reasonable is a finding of fact. I think whether the actions of the officer were reasonable is a conclusion of law. I haven't challenged the court's factual findings about how the stop occurred, how the search occurred, what the reasons the officer gave were for delaying in even attempting to procure a search warrant.
So
I haven't challenged
limited,
those factual findings.
We're limited then to determining whether the findings support the trial court's conclusion of law that this was a reasonable period of time.
That's correct. I believe whether the delay was reasonable is a conclusion of law that is appropriate for this court to review the trial court's determination that was reasonable. As I've argued in the brief, it was unreasonable. I want to briefly touch on the other part of the search issue that I've raised, which was a search warrant for the cell phones. Incidentally, the cell phone records were specifically relied on by the trial court to find Mr. Ferguson guilty of possession with intent to deliver drugs rather than just simple possession. So the cell phone records were germane to the case and to the prosecution and to Mr. Ferguson's conviction. As I've argued in that case, the failure to preserve a record of the search warrant application precluded a review of the search warrant application process by the Superior Court and precludes this court from reviewing probable cause for the issuance of that warrant.
May it please the Court, Hillary Thomas for the State of Washington. I intend to address the seizure issue, and unless the Court has other questions regarding the other issues. First of all, appellant makes reference here today to Article 1, Section 7 of the State Constitution. That is not what is before this Court. That is not what he briefed in his opening brief regarding the basis for this. And Huff, which is the case that was relied upon by the trial court, was a case in which there was no, or the court made no distinction between the state standard and the federal standard. And so what we have before the court is a federal standard, and we're talking about a possessory interest, and we're not talking about the privacy interest. And so the federal test to be applied here is a reasonableness test. So we are not addressing an Article 1, Section 7 heightened privacy interest here, but we're dealing with a possessory interest and a reasonableness test, which was what was applied by the court in State versus Huff. And I would like to note that, as noted in Huff, a possessory interest is, or greater intrusion on a possessory interest is justified in order to protect the heightened privacy interest that can be at stake. And in this case, the state submits that the 15 hours was reasonable. The officer stopped the car somewhere around 10:30 p.m. on a Sunday night. He was going off shift at about, I think it was 2 a.m. He impounded the car and had it towed to Western Washington University. This was a Western Washington University officer. and had it detained, sealed, until the next day when he came on shift 2 hours early in order to start processing the paperwork and contacting the prosecutor's office regarding the warrant and application for the search warrant, and then the warrant itself was issued and executed later that day.
So, so the delay is for the convenience of the officer, and so that he doesn't incur overtime, I take it, or what? Is he reluctant to wake up a magistrate?
Well, there's a number of reasons that...
Now, what's going on between 11 p.m. and when he comes to work, albeit 2 hours early?
Nothing
is going on. So what's the purpose of the delay other than the fact that he doesn't want to work late?
Well, that's not in the record. It's not in the record that he did it simply because he didn't want to.
It's a problem for you that it's not in the record, because I don't know of a case that allows 15 hours without some factual showing as to the basis for the 15-hour delay.
Well, Your Honor, I do think that I have quoted or referenced federal cases which allow for a greater time period, and there are also state cases that I have referenced and which talk about at a minimum 24 hours and in some cases 48 hours when you're talking only a possessory interest. But in this case, what you have is an officer, and under the reasonableness standard, we're talking about whether or not there's a diligence. And under U.S. versus Johns, the court does not talk about whether or not there was what the officer was doing, but whether the absence of any asserted adverse effect on a privacy or possessory interest. So in this case, delaying from the Sunday night, whether it be not wanting to wake a judge up in the middle of the night in order to address this, or whether wanting to make sure that he was covering his bases and making sure that he has all things that he needs to have in the search warrant application. The practice in Whatcom County is for the officers to contact a deputy prosecutor. It's not for them to contact the judge directly. So you have, and there's a number of good reasons for that. And one of the cases.
When did he contact the prosecuting attorney's office?
Well, my understanding from the record is it said around 3 o'clock, 3:20 the next day. So he comes in early on his shift at 2 p.m., starts processing the paperwork, and I imagine gets it ready. And this is not necessarily, this is a situation in which the defendant indicated to the officer that he had a prescription for medical marijuana, although he didn't have it on him, and it turned out later on that he did have some kind of prescription. So there were good reasons that the officer may have wanted to discuss and further contact above and beyond the fact that it's the practice in Whatcom County that they have to go through a deputy prosecutor before contacting a judge. And again, there are really good reasons for doing that. And one of the federal cases talked about, you know, slapdash and hurrying to getting warrants is not a good idea because you can end up having, you know, sloppy work done and having your warrant overturned because it wasn't adequate. And so we don't want to be going in that direction. We want to make sure that there's a careful consideration of the facts and everything that needs to be before the court in order to make sure that we have a valid warrant, that we have sufficient probable cause for whatever the particular crime is. And the officer may want to consider discussing with the prosecutor what the crime should be. He did indicate that he wasn't sure what he had, which was the reason why that he allowed the defendant to go after he had originally arrested him.
So if I look at these other cases you've cited in your brief, am I going to find a record as devoid of an explanation for the time period as this one? Because what you've just told me isn't in the record as far as I know. All we know is at 11 o'clock he seizes the car, and at 3:20 he applies for a warrant.
Yes, Your Honor, and it is in the record that he waited to or that he released the defendant because he wasn't sure what he had. And so I think you can surmise from that that this and the fact that we're dealing with a situation where he indicated he had a prescription.
Well, my question was about the cases you've cited. Are they equally silent with regard to the reasons for the delay, or are there explanations in
that? There's the Vermont case, which I think is very close and similar in facts, in which they were, I think that one was a Saturday night, 1 a.m. on a Saturday night, and they waited until the next business day, which was on a Monday, and the defendant had been pulled over for a traffic infraction. I believe it was a canine had alerted regarding marijuana in the car. And they waited till the next business day to contact the court and get the paperwork done and apply for the. And there, and again, under the federal standard, you are talking about a reasonable standard. You're talking about the balancing of the justification for intruding upon the person's possessory interest and the government's interest in pursuing and investigating a crime. So, and under Johns, again, the court is looking at the absence of an adverse effect on the possessory interest of the individual. And in this case, the defendant didn't object. He didn't say, I want my cell phone. There's nothing in the record. Let's put it that way. There's nothing in the record that the defendant said, I want my cell phone. I want my car keys. I want my wallet. Or I want my car. That there's some reason why he needed that car and it couldn't wait until the next day.
Isn't it troubling that he doesn't get the keys to go home? He doesn't get his wallet when he leaves?
Well, Your Honor,
I've got a little problem with keeping those things when he's released.
I'm not sure that the officer knows those things were in the car. I mean, I would have to assume that he thinks the keys are in the car, but he believes the wallet was found in the center console, so he's not going to know until he actually searches the car that those things are there. And there's nothing in the record that indicates the defendant says, I have these things in my car and I want them. Again, while there may be an absence of information as to exactly what the officer was doing every single minute of the time from the time that he towed or had the vehicle towed to the Western Washington University's lot, the time that he actually got the warrant, there's also nothing in the record to indicate that this individual had a heightened possessory interest or that there was some great need to have the car and to not allow a reasonable time period within which to get a search warrant. And I would, as I indicated in my briefing, we have it's been determined that a 48-hour time period is reasonable within which to make a probable cause determination on a warrantless arrest with respect to a person. So with respect to a person, you would think that that would be a greater interest than simply a possessory interest in one's vehicle. and the test to be applied by the federal standard, the reasonableness test, is, again, the nature and quality of the intrusion against the importance of the governmental interests justifying an intrusion. And in this case, we have the immediate presence or smell of unburnt marijuana, a defendant who claims that there's no marijuana in the car, that he hasn't been smoking marijuana. And so there was probable cause, particularly with the canine alert onto the car. And so the officers investigating that. The 48-hour time period that I mentioned is one that was set forth by the U.S. Supreme Court in Riverside. There are a number of reasons, Your Honor, had asked about reasons why it shouldn't be just immediate, in addition to needing perhaps the advice of prosecutors. I would submit, at least for myself, that doing things in the middle of the night when I've been, you know, woken up from sleep is not the best time to be making determinations. It is better to have a clear head and to address those during the business day.
Thank you, counsel.
First of all, there it is perfectly possible for an officer to contact a deputy prosecuting attorney in the middle of the night. They carry pagers. It happens all the time in Whatcom County, where emergency situations for search warrants are dealt with on the telephone. They call a deputy prosecutor, they do a three-way call with the judge, and they can get a search warrant any time of day or night. It happens all the time.
There isn't any debate that it was possible. The question is strictly whether it was reasonable or unreasonable. The contents of the vehicle, does the record establish that your client made any demand for his wallet or his cell phones at the time the car was impounded?
I don't think the record reflects whether he did or not. He certainly objected to a search of his car. You know, he was detained briefly, placed in handcuffs, and placed into the back of a patrol car. Before being placed in the back of a patrol car, he was frisked for weapons. That's standard procedure. So he was told the car was going to be impounded, and he was asked to leave the scene. So he was ordered away from the scene 11:30 at night on November 29th.
The officer was able to identify him.
Yeah.
I mean, usually the ID's in the wallet and somebody's...
Well,
the point of my question is, if the record doesn't identify that, then the focus stays on the car. So we're still on the vehicle itself.
Yeah,
just the reason.
Well, the car and all of its contents, the state argued just now that he showed no particular reason no need to keep the car. Well, it's November 29th. It's 11 o'clock at night. He's meant to walk home at that point. I think any citizen, you know, needs and has a right to use the car that they're driving around in. With regard to the court's question regarding the reason for the delay, this is on page 4 of my brief. The officer was asked, and he said, my reasoning was there were no exigent circumstances that I knew of. And it being 11:30 on a Sunday night, I thought it would be better, instead of making a call to get a warrant that night, I thought it would be better to do it the next day. He was also asked, well, why did you release him if you had probable cause to arrest him? He said, well, I did not know what the car contained. I wasn't sure what I could charge him with if I had tried to book him into jail, so I released him. So the officer did not have probable cause to arrest Mr. Ferguson and detain him and take him to jail. That's why he released him. He didn't know, in his own words, he said, I didn't know what to charge him with. You know, at that point, if he believed and wanted to make a case to a judge that there was evidence of illegal activity inside that car, he should have done so. For him to decide, well, I'll just take the car and I'll wait till tomorrow afternoon, you know, that deprived Mr. Ferguson of a significant interest in his vehicle that night. You know, we have to look at these Fourth Amendment cases from the perspective of every citizen driving around who hasn't done anything illegal. And, you know, with hindsight, Mr. Ferguson was possessing cocaine, and it makes it hard to look at the issue in terms of every other citizen that's out there. But this could happen to somebody who was not possessing cocaine. And to be deprived of your vehicle overnight for no reason, for the officer's convenience, is not acceptable. Our warrant requirement, our constitutional warrant requirement, the statutory and court rules that have been set up around procuring warrants, the reasons for this is to not leave these things up to the whims of the officer in the field. And for this officer to decide, well, I think I'll just hold this vehicle for 15 hours and apply for a warrant tomorrow, that's not acceptable.
I understand your point. But it seems to me that were this 75 or 80 years ago, it would be even more well taken, because what we've done is we've kind of slid a little bit on this, so that the officer only needs to have something akin to a suspicion that a crime's been committed in order to detain an individual, which is a higher standard than merely detaining an automobile. And it makes it's fairly slippery. Everything becomes a little bit somewhat subjective. And to whom do we, where do we break here with a subjective standard? The officer did say that he suspected there was marijuana. He said it in so many words, did he not? That there was marijuana in the car.
He did suspect there was marijuana in the car, yeah.
So isn't that enough for some detention of the vehicle?
As State versus Huff said, for amount of time reasonably necessary to procure a warrant, not for him to get off shift and go home and have a night's sleep. That's not what the law says, and that's not what the law should say. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is...